Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thanks for your interest in the research.
Currently, there are no out men in the 32 teams who participated in the World Cup. Having done this study, is this indicative, you think, of a prejudice in football culture?
It is quite amazing that 700-plus players were in the World Cup, as well as, all the previous World Cups, and not a single one was openly gay. And I think that's quite alarming, actually, if you think about the number of players who've played at that high level, and no one's felt safe to come out and say, hey, I'm gay and I'm proud of it, and feel safe to do that. And we know from the data from two large government studies now, from the U.S. government and the Canadian government, which are very recent, with over 125,000 kids, that indeed the earlier estimates that around 10% of the population is gay were correct. So we know that there should have been at least 70 players at this World Cup, and there were zero. And the problem seemed to stem from the grassroots, where kids are self-selecting out. They're basically fleeing organized team sport if they're gay. And even lesbian players, they play a little. They're much more likely to play team sport than gay and bisexual males. But even they play less sport overall than straight girls. So gay kids are just fleeing sport. They're not making it to the elite levels because they're facing so much discrimination in the form of homophobic slurs and jokes and banter on the footy fields. And so why would they stick around? And so I think that's, we're seeing the symptom of that, where we don't see players. But surely, even then, a few should have made the elite levels, and they're not feeling safe to come out either.
Indeed, statistically, it does seem a tad unlikely. Just before I talk to you a little bit about that grassroots culture, just about the FIFA World Cup itself, it was hosted in Russia this year. And I must admit, when we were talking about this story, and the first thing that did kind of jump out to me is Russia is notorious for its anti-gay, lesbian, trans policies. It is notorious for being a real hotbed of this kind of controversy at the moment. Do you feel it was significant the World Cup was hosted by Russia this year?
Oh, yeah, of course. And similar to Qatar in a few years, it just it sends us a very clear message that you're not welcome in our sport if we're going to host the premier championship of our sport in a country where you're basically can be thrown in jail for being who you are. So I think it's, and that's a step beyond just discrimination. That's, direct threats to someone's personal safety and security if they were out in those countries. And so I think on one hand, the world has changed a lot in recent years. And on the other hand, sport seems to be lagging behind the rest of the world when it comes to inclusion of LGBTI people, but particularly lesbian and gay bisexual people.
Now, you mentioned, of course, the soccer culture we see from a grassroots level, really a sporting culture and a culture we do see in, I guess, groups of the same sex. When the same sex all get together and they sort of have their little classic bants, this isn't exactly a surprising one to see come out of it. These kind of, anti-homosexual slurs, all kinds of slurs of that nature. What do you think needs to actually be done at that level to make sure we have a more inclusive kind of space? I mean, does it need to be called out to begin with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And unfortunately, until the research that we started here at Monash University, there had been zero research in terms of figuring out how to get that language in particular to stop. Because we do know that on the teams that we've studied, and we've examined people playing all different sports. The one common denominator of all of them is that they say teammates use words like fag and puff quite regularly. And so how do you get them to stop using that? Well, they're not using racist slurs, at least is not nearly as much as they used to. And that's because those unwritten rules we call social norms have changed. So people know they'll get in a lot of trouble if they, use the N-word, for example, or the reactions we've seen to some players being called monkey, some Aboriginal players. But the same reaction doesn't happen for words like fag and puff. They're just laughed off. And so any program will need to change how the words are viewed, so they're not just viewed as banter. And the program we've developed is showing some promising results. We're working with professional athletes to deliver a training program to kids, boys, 16 to 20-year-olds. And it appears this early stage that we're able to change and shift their perceptions of the language so they don't see it as just harmless fun. But it's a long journey. That's just step one. You know, the next step is people need to feel safe to call it out when they hear it and not be criticized themselves and become targets of bullies. So it's a bit of a journey. It's a sad one because gay athletes, rightly so, don't feel safe coming out. So unless they come out, there's no one there to call out the language. So it's going to take some brave allies to stop the language. But even then, you know, they're going up against a pretty tough fight.
And I know this was a study, you know, an international study, but here at home, here in Australia, we've also got a very strong sporting culture. How did you feel the results compared with Australian soccer in terms of acceptance and diversity?
Yeah, so the study we did a couple of years ago and the recent research we're doing now, the results are the same. There's no real difference between sports, surprisingly. We thought that there would be differences between sports in terms of the language used and the perception that an environment is hostile, but we haven't found that. So, you know, soccer is the most played sport by lesbian and gay bisexual kids, and like all kids. And so, but the language wasn't any more, you know, they weren't reporting more language in soccer than, say, rugby players or, you know, tennis players or anyone else. So it's across the board. Sport seems to be this one pocket of society where it's just, you know, no holds barred. Call people whatever you want as long as it's not racist.
Eric, thanks very much. Really do appreciate you joining us here and having a bit of a chat with us about it.
Yeah, thanks for your interest. Really appreciate it, Sean.